Welcome to Ride, the Urban Mobility Podcast.
Welcome to Ride, the Urban Mobility Podcast, hosted by me, Martin Carl of Thebetic,
and me, Johnny Combe of PaybackPhone. Ride, the Urban Mobility Podcast, takes a look at the impact of new business models and new technologies on urban mobility from a global business perspective, and explores how each new solution fits into the wider mobility ecosystem.
The format of Ride is simple. We invite top industry experts to join us for an open and candid conversation. Ride is about the guests, what they have to say, and what they bring to the discussion.
You can find more details about shows and guests on our website, www.ridemobilitypodcast.com.
Thanks for joining us for this, the fourth and final instalment in a series of Ride podcast episodes recorded live at Reuters Automotive Europe earlier this year. This discussion about the evolution of sustainable mobility in Europe featured Jonna Christians, CEO and co-founder of Sono Motors, Alain Fisser, CEO of Link & Co., Marcus Veltz, Vice President Smart Mobility at Hyundai Europe, and Patrick Ayad, Global Leader Mobility and Transportation at law firm Hogan Lovells. Automakers have for over a century been selling a dream, namely a means of mobility. But as the focus of mobility shifts from a reliance on personal transportation to a seamless multimodal journey that's clean and with zero emissions, can the automakers pivot and remain relevant while still selling a dream? And what will that dream be? Will it involve multimodal mobility, mobility as a service? Will it be on demand, shared, autonomous? And how can we be sure that the dream will be built on sustainability? We're hearing questions raised about the CO2 emissions of electric vehicle production. We're seeing the realities of the raw material supply chain for electric vehicle batteries, open cast lithium mining, questionable cobalt sourcing, and 30-mile-long traffic jams at African national borders of heavy-duty diesel-powered trucks carrying the various raw materials needed for zero-emissions mobility. And those raw materials have yet to make their long journey around the world to the different countries, mainly Asian, with the expertise for refining, battery cell manufacturing, and battery pack assembly before they even get anywhere near the zero emissions car they will power or the market in which that car will operate. And it looks like we're seeing the start of a correction of expectations as well, with some of the companies once seen as sure-footed market leaders falling by the wayside as the financial realities of the future of sustainable mobility come home to roost. Look at the rapidly changing fortunes of companies as diverse as Argo AI, Lyft, Bird, and GoSharing. Of course, market corrections are always expected, especially in such a new and dynamic market. And as the song goes, only the strong survive. I think you'll agree, though, the panel certainly didn't disappoint, but that was to be expected, seeing as it featured a large, well-established automaker that's channeling considerable efforts into sustainable mobility, a new vehicle brand that wants to sell mobility, not cars. Think Netflix for cars. An all-new and exciting car company whose very existence is built on sustainability, and a lawyer and mobility specialist representing both traditional automotive industry companies and emerging mobility players. We talked about whether electrification is the solution to mobility's sustainability challenge, and we talked about ownership versus usership, the pros and cons of developing different and competing zero-emission propulsion technologies, such as battery electric and fuel cell electric vehicles. We looked at whether technology development should be driven by regulation or market forces. Talked about sustainability, of course, and ESG. I asked the panel, what does sustainable mobility even mean? And we looked at whether automakers really get mobility. I'd like to thank Jonna, Alan, Marcus, and Patrick for taking part in this discussion and Reuters Events for collaborating on this recording. You can learn more about Reuters Events at reutersevents.com, and you can subscribe to Ride wherever you get your podcasts. And feel free to share it, like it, give it a rating, sign up to the Ride LinkedIn page, and check out our website, ridemobilitypodcast.com. So perhaps we can begin by each of you just giving us a brief introduction of what you do and what your role is in sustainable mobility. Let's start with you, Alan.
Yeah, hi. I run Link & Co. We're a company that was started out of the car industry to shake it up a bit and disrupt it a bit, with the intention of not just bringing another car to the marketplace, but come with a different mobility concept. In a world where sustainability seems to be identified by going electric, we see that that is only part of it, but using a car more is our thing. the average car in the world is used for 5%, and we think that cannot be a sustainable business model. So our model is really to offer an experience around mobility rather than selling a product.
Thanks. Marcus.
Yeah, good morning. It's always exciting when we get the opportunity to talk about innovation, and I would argue there is no industry which is embracing so much innovation as automotive and mobility. My name is Markus Wels. I'm Vice President of Hyundai Motor Europe, and I'm responsible for the connected car and mobility business. And I'm actually a toddler when it comes to automotive. For the past 15 years, I worked in the mobility and tech industry, and it's quite exciting to be now on the other side of the aisle. And so you can somehow locate me at the intersection between the vehicle, the driver, the data, and the technology. And I think even as a company, Hyundai Motor is in going through an amazing journey. I mean, we actually launched our first car just 5 years before I was born, and now we are quite an exciting brand and have, with our electric vehicle lined up, laid a solid foundation for the future. So it's time to move it to the next level.
Talking of cars being born, Jona, tell us about Sona Motors.
Sure. My name is Jona Christians. I'm CEO and founder of Sona Motors. Sona Motors envisions a world without fossil fuels. Envisions a world where energy is used from the sun, because the energy from the sun is ubiquitous. You got to imagine, every hour, the Earth is hit by the sun, by the amount of energy we as a whole population on planet Earth use in a whole year, in 1 hour. That's how ubiquitous that energy is, and our goal is to use that, to harvest that energy. We do that with three pillars. We build a car, and family-friendly car with solar integration. We also provide this technology to other OEMs and other, whatever it be, trucks, buses, trains. Imagine every moving object we can bring solar on. And third, we also provide an app ecosystem, so to make sure that the vehicles previously mentioned are shared as much as possible. And we right now are facing the next hurdle, which is production. It will start end of next year, and that will be also tough times, I guess.
Patrick, what's your involvement in mobility?
Patrick Ayat, global leader in mobility transportation at Hogan Lovells, which is a law firm. But we are very much organized through sectors, and we want to shape also the future of mobility, including automotive, of course, and particularly on the regulatory side. And then when it comes to sustainability and ESG, this is certainly also a legal topic. So we are deeply involved in these issues and want to solve them together with the industry.
So you might be the first person I'll turn to for the first question. We've just heard from Shell, a major company, and a major petroleum company in this case, about how it needs to ensure sustainability. What for you does sustainable mobility mean?
Let me answer this way, because I think we have an excellent panel here to go into the details here, because sustainability, if you look at the traditional players, you know, the players that had the idea many, many years ago to simply replace the horse, there was nothing like sustainability or environmental issues or something. And for them, of course, they need to radically change. Then we have companies like Sona Motors, if I may say. I think the only reason why they were founded is basically because they think they need to make this world better. So this comes more naturally at this stage. And then I think we have a quite interesting company that Alan is running, Lynk & Co, which is, of course, part of a very large organization or group, the Geely Group. But I think, Alan, and you will tell us about it, you could basically start from scratch and there also try to implement from the very beginning all these sustainability considerations. And I think this is very interesting to see how it develops, and, of course, how the big players, such as Shell, need to transform, and they do.
Could we call you a startup still within the
I think
the
we are, yeah. I think we're a bit of best of, it's like the luxury startup, because you have the funding there from the mother company, but the company very much, and if you would be within my team, it's very much indeed a startup, and you're absolutely right. We started from a clean sheet of paper. It took some time to convince the traditional owner, and in the beginning they looked at me as if I was smoking the wrong substance, but it took, after some time, you get the support, and then it becomes pretty intriguing.
Marcus, what's the view from Hyundai?
I mean, when we talk about sustainability, of course, we are in the middle of a, let's say, huge transformation from the combustion engine car to the electric vehicle. But I think when we talk about sustainability, we should, let's say, look at it a little broader. I mean, there are, I think, 1.4 billion cars on the world globally. And within my lifetime, these numbers are going to increase until to between 3 and 4 billion. Right? So the mobility models we have today, let's say, will simply not work tomorrow, right? So the answer also to more cars cannot be building more roads. We need not only to consume the infrastructure more efficiently, we have also, let's say, to, let's say, think about not only smart and clean cars, but also about smart traffic, smart parking, smart tolling. And I think these integrated systems which utilize real-time data can improve personal mobility on a massive scale with and then supporting the environment and making mobility much more personalized. Let me tell you maybe very briefly what I mean. I mean, I commute every day from Heidelberg, Germany to Frankfurt, Germany. This is a 80 kilometers commute. In a couple of years back, I would have been punished, rightfully so, of doing this. So I'm driving a battery electric vehicle, which is nice, but it's only one part. There's usually a lot of struggle when also on a German motorway because you often need to leave and go to sideways in order to make it to your destination. And today, this is not even a stressful factor anymore because everybody's connected car system, uses real-time data, travel time, environmental conditions, own patterns of the driving, and it finds the best way to go there. And I don't even need to push a button on the display. I can use my voice, and I can even inform, if I want to, my wife when exactly I'm going to be home, right? Without the need of taking out the smartphone. And these are the solutions which can also help in the large-scale adoption of electric vehicles, because a big topic is still the range anxiety when it comes to the adoption of electric vehicles. And even with, let's say, the world's car of the year, the Hyundai Ioniq 5, the with a very long range and a charging time in just 18 minutes, there is this challenge. So, but what technology can do is really enable that we can plan, book, and pay a charging trip seamlessly, right? So no worries about, even if I have to make a big detour or a person like me forgot to charge overnight, and then how can I really make it there? Am I sure that the charging station is functioning, it's not occupied, and how do I pay at this specific charging station? I think these are solutions which can ultimately make a big difference also when it comes to sustainability.
It's easy to think from popular discourse that electrification means sustainability, but images of open cast lithium mines are a long way from the kind of clean mobility that automakers and regulators and governments would like us to imagine. And people using electric vehicles are using them in good faith. But is electrification the answer? Let's go down the line.
It's part of the answer, and I think that's part of the, sorry to say so, but the hypocrisy of this industry. Suddenly the whole car industry claims to be sustainable, which, sorry for my French, is bullshit. It's if your business model consists of selling as many as possible products that are used for 5% of the time, that is not at all sustainable. And let's face it, that's what all car manufacturers are doing.
Because an EV is still a car, right?
Because an EV is still a car, and it's a very, very good technological revolution, but it's just a small part that the real revolution will come and can come with autonomous drive, where transportation, mobility will become a service. And I've been saying for a long time, the car industry needs to make a decision. Do you want to be Boeing or do you want to be Lufthansa? And with no exception, all of them have chosen to be Boeing, which I think is a fundamental mistake. Because in the future, you will not drive a car brand, you will use a service brand. Already today, you don't go to the city with a Toyota Prius, you take an Uber. So it's happening. It's happening in front of our eyes, and the car industry is sleeping. So I think what we're saying is, yeah, we do have a car. We don't talk about it so often because we think the future is all about offering mobility services, and electrification makes the product sustainable but not the mobility concept.
Marcus, your bosses probably want you to sell a lot of cars still, but you're in sustainable mobility. So how do those two balance?
Yeah, absolutely. And I would probably try to defend a little bit the electric vehicle for a second, right? But I mean, I'm in many aspects, right? I would totally agree because, and I mentioned this, right? The answer, I mean, cannot be building more and more cars. And I would also argue there are a lot of trips which are actually not ideal for a car, right? And this is also where I believe there is a synergetic aspect, even with other modes of transport and, let's say, automotive or mobility, which seems maybe not, let's say, so clear from the beginning, but public transport, right? So the biggest problem of public transport system is giving more people access to public transport because, let's face it, often public transport doesn't start where we want it to start, it doesn't end where we want it to end, and it doesn't go all the time. So this is why we go into the car, right? And utilizing maybe vehicles in an on-demand transportation as a last-mile solution in order to help people to cover the last mile or give more people access to public transport or bring people into the city closer to a transit network. This is also where there is a room for automotive to play. For instance, we have Shuttle, which is our on-demand transportation solution, where we are, this is not a bus which rumbles behind your office on fixed routes and fixed schedules. It is like a ride pooling system where, let's say, we enable true door-to-door mobility and it picks up people and drops at a destination, and there is an, let's say, I don't want to call it AI because AI is also used as a buzzword, but there is a, let's say, strong logic and data engineering behind on how to optimize travel times, waiting times, and fleet occupancy. But maybe one word to electrification, because the I think we always have to also consider where we're coming from, right? And we know that, let's say, the cars are here to stay, and the cars, let's say, individual transportation will remain the most important means of transportation. And we just can't, let's say, achieve our, let's say, zero targets, we can't get net zero without making that shift to, let's say, electric vehicle, because the efficiency compared, the efficiency of a ICE car is around 30-20%, where you have 90% efficiency. We have even if you consider the battery, we mention it rightfully so, that there are, of course, also when it comes to there's a certain gold rush now in the getting the lithium, which is required in order to produce all the batteries. And there is certainly a challenge at the beginning until we have ramped up and made this major transformation to electric vehicles. But the battery as such, has a long life cycle. It can even be used after the automotive and more stationary equipment. 99% can be recycled. And we can really go into a circular economy. And this will make mobility much more sustainable.
Is the Sono Motors plan to sell cars to individuals, or are you looking at a shared model? What's the plan there? And where does that fit into this question?
Yeah, first of all, generally speaking, what we at Sono Motors always say is combustion engine cars are part of the past. We know it. The EU legislation just showed us it will be part of the past. Now, electric vehicles are the present. They're there. We have the infrastructure by now. A lot of people are already driving it, and so we know that's here. The future is all electric vehicles. And that is something which is quite interesting, because Ellen and me talked about it just before this panel also. We're approaching the same problem from both sides. What we need is a car that is made for sharing. And solar is just one key aspect of it. There are many more things. We also talked about it, technicalities, but you got to imagine a car that is standing around and charging itself. That is a car that is there to be shared, because it can, everywhere you let it stand, it charges itself and you can go again from A to B. And that's why we see it as a whole. We don't think like one product solves it, or electrification itself, as you asked, will solve it. But think of every aspect of the ecosystem, and that will change it.
Patrick.
Yeah, let me go back to my initial statement. I really think, the traditional players are in a very difficult situation. And of course, they know the issues around, manufacturing versus services. If you look back 2010 or so, there was an electrification movement in the industry. They were pushing it, but people were not accepting it. And it was only then the Volkswagen and other incidents that were needed to give this electrification this strong push. At the same time, they cannot invest in everything. So we have autonomous, connected, electric, shared vehicles. We can see at the beginning they try to invest in all of these areas, and now it's getting a little bit more difficult. So they go full speed electrification. Maybe connectivity is also likewise important. And that's just difficult. There is still a lot of demand for individual cars. And you want to fulfill this demand as a manufacturer. You have responsibility to make your company profitable. So that makes it very difficult. But on the other point, sustainability, of course, is not just environmental issues. We also have supply chain issues in terms of social responsibility. We have diversity and inclusion. We have data, responsible use of data. These are major topics that we will have in the industry going forward. And I think it will be very difficult for the players to resolve it, but they need to.
You mentioned that not everybody can invest in everything, and so there is a push towards electrification, but competition drives innovation. Do you think push towards electrification prevents other technologies from being evolved and developed? So, or is something like competing battery electric vehicles versus fuel cell electric vehicles versus, I don't know, synthetic fuels, is that healthy? Or should we all just pursue one technology? I mean, Hyundai's got a range of solutions in the group.
Yeah, and maybe not necessarily starting with a traditional argumentation, because I think it has, let's say, really never been the case that a global problem has been solved with a monolithical technology approach, right? And so multi-technology approach has always been, let's say, the key to solve large-scale problems and like we have in the global warming. The second part is, let's say, technology, at the end of the day, need to be the enabler. We always have to solve a specific use case. And there are use cases where, let's say, a fuel cell electric vehicle, even today, is more suitable than a battery electric vehicle. If you're thinking about maybe not necessarily traditional passenger cars, although we have passenger cars, fuel cell passenger cars, but if you think about the, if you're driving a truck, heavy-duty truck, long distances over the Alps. This is a use case which is simply difficult to put to life in a large scale with electric vehicle and with a battery powered electric motor. And even the charging stations for these use cases are different. Where should we put all these charging stations for the logistics in order to make that happen, right? So I think there are use cases, and how we consider this from a Hyundai perspective is, of course, we have a large fuel cell plant where we produce the fuel cell, and not only for, let's say, passenger or commercial vehicles, but also for other modes of transportation, ships, aircrafts, rail. So there is a certain, let's say, experience and scale in that system, which, of course, helps to tackle also the economy of scale challenge, which is certainly the case when we talk about both, let's say, new technologies which need to be scale, and economies need to happen in the manufacturing plants. Yeah, but again, I think also considering that in the future, the ecosystem we are in right now on how energy is being produced, stored, distributed, will look very different in 10 or 15 years from now, even here in Europe. This means that in such an ecosystem, also hydrogen can play a much bigger role in road transportation.
Alan, you're part of a larger group that's got a number of technologies, including electrification, non-electric products, but also battery swap. Are you under any pressure? I imagine that you push back on pressure from the way you talk. But are you under any pressure to pursue any particular type of technology with Link & Co, or did you decide to go electric only?
Yeah, we decided to go electric only, even though today our car is a plug-in hybrid, which we've decided to choose for the simple reason that the charging infrastructure is not good enough and is getting worse. The increase of electric vehicles is bigger than the increase of charging stations, so the problem is getting bigger. We believe, and I strongly believe, that electrified vehicles is the future.
Did you look at battery swap at all?
Yeah, no, I do not believe in battery swap at all. No, I do not believe in the long-term viability of this battery swap idea. I think it's absurd. I think that electric vehicles are the future. I think, yeah, we give ourselves credit, the industry, look how modern we are. Let's face it, without Elon Musk, we still would be making combustion engines. He's shown the world how to make them. I remember, and I wish I had taped it in 2010, in the company I worked then, a car company, how the head of electrification was explaining me with total conviction, Alain, there will never be a car that drives 250 kilometers on one battery, and 2 years later the Tesla came. So it's an industry driven by engineers, and engineers, sorry for those in the room, that are experts in explaining why things are not possible, and they always end up being possible afterwards. So it's just gonna happen. It's just gonna happen. But as I said before, the technology of the it's just another machine under the hood. It's for me that the electrification of this industry is a small change. I know this sounds absurd for a lot of people in the room, but it is. It just changes the machine under the hood. What has to change is the mobility. And I do agree with what you said, is that the majority of the people on this planet still want to buy a car. According to our data, it's 70-80%. So it's a minority, but it's a fastly growing minority. And we keep on repeating the number that cars are used for 5%. If there's one, and it sounds cynical to say, one positive thing about the past 2 years with COVID, is that 5% was probably 2%. Right. And more people realize, do I really need to own a car if I just use it for 3, 4, 5% of the time? So that acceleration process is now going very fast. And I'm not saying the others are stupid and we're clever, but I'm saying there's enough people out there who want something fundamentally different than owning a car or leasing a car. So we basically said, just use a car on a monthly level, and that's now called subscription. In Germany, it's Abo, and it's a big marketing blah, blah, because the Abos in Germany are all leasing, but we now just call it Abo. The difference is that we always sit with the Netflix of the car industry. It's a 1 month, and you pull out whenever you want. So suddenly everybody calls it subscription, and wow, how cool the German car industry is. We now have Abo. It's leasing. It's just marketing, blah, blah. So I think the real future is in using a car instead of buying a car or leasing it. You know.
How are you feeling sitting there listening to these guys from major automakers who are facing problems building electric vehicles, entering into a market that they're finding difficult? And how do you run the numbers when you're looking at trying to produce vehicles that you don't necessarily want people to own?
Yeah. Well, here's the thing. We do have private customers. So we have by now roughly 9,000 people who reserved the car, who paid for the car, and we are pre-production, right? So there's a huge trust also in Zona Motors. And our way is that we think we are not here to tell people to stop doing what they're doing. We rather offer a better option. And it's kind of like all these 19,000 people reserve their private car at the moment. Yet the car is made to be shared. With the tap of the button, they can share the vehicle. And thus, and also referring what you said, thus we will going to see that shift in people's heads. But we got to start somewhere. And we start with a private car, but we make that shift with these people, like taking these people by their hand and not saying, from now on, you cannot own a car anymore. That does not work. That will bring us nowhere. But rather take the people by their hand and say, well, look here, we offer you a better option how to share your car. And I guess the whole culture of Zona, the whole understanding of Zona is that way. We're never there to say, well, you're a bad person because you drive an ICE car. We're not these kind of people. We offer a better option for these people to make the switch.
Patrick, since you don't represent an automaker, we've been sitting here talking about mobility, and all of the talk so far has been about cars. But if you just go out into the streets out here, I mean, I lived in Munich 25 years ago. It was only cars. Now, there are far fewer cars. It's bikes, it's e-scooters, it's kick scooters. Talk a little bit about, from your perspective, can an automaker survive in the world of mobility? And what do they have to do when they're faced with people using cars fewer times of the day, let's say maybe not using cars at all, and turning to micromobility solutions?
Pooh, that's a difficult question. I think, you know, I think you need to look at this whole issue more holistically and the future of mobility. And that's not just the car, indeed. That's micromobility. That's also, you know, trains. That's, you know, go up in the air, aircraft. Hyundai, for example, is doing this. They have an own entity, Supernal, which is looking into, you know, urban mobility, unmanned aircraft and whatever. So I think you need to look at these issues much more holistically and come up with mobility concepts. And at the end of the day, I don't know if the traditional players, and I think Alan indicated to this, need to make a decision, you know, do I want to be a manufacturer or do I want to be a mobility service provider? If you look at Magna, for example, this is one of the biggest automotive manufacturers in the world, but it's not someone that offers these cars as to consumers or so, or through a dealer network. They are producing for others. And so their role is pretty clearly defined. So I also see the large suppliers in a pretty robust role here, because their role is very much defined, whereas the OEMs, they probably are at the moment somewhat more struggling, but you know, they try to transform and they try to, you know, think a little bit wider and holistically when it comes to the future of mobility.
And maybe just to add a bit on this, I mean, indeed, it is a major shift for any OEM to go from a hardware production-centric product business, right? Wholesaling cars, I mean, whenever the car drives off the dealership, you may not even know who is driving the car anymore, right? I mean, and to a model new world, where all the paradigms, rules of thumbs, all the heuristic knowledge from decades of an industry will simply change, right? So this is the business model.
Dealerships, right?
Dealership, but this one part is not only the dealership, it's not only how to sell the car itself, right? People will, of course, in the future still choose a certain body style, a design, or a service quality. But the future of the car has as much to do with the car, let's say, from today or the past, as an iPhone has with a traditional, let's say, mobile phone. So this will be a huge transformation. Actually, the much bigger transformation, I think, is yet ahead of us, and it's not the transformation of the powertrain.
Tell us a little bit about what mobility means for Hyundai. Patrick mentioned the urban air mobility project that you have going. I think you have a scooter project somewhere in the company as well. Is it about the car, or are you looking out to other services? I know that Ford Motor Company, for example, tried various things. They've pulled back. Do automakers want to get into micromobility?
I mean, I think looking at it holistically is the right approach, right? I don't think that the car as a device is the sole answer to this, and this is also not our strategy. Our strategy is really how can we move people seamlessly and sustainably, let's say, from A to B using multiple modes of transportation, where we, of course, believe the car as a big, smart device, one of the probably the most sophisticated, the most complex, and the most desirable IoT device we have ever seen before. This is what the car is going to be, and the so if you think about a connected car as an example, then it's not just it's a car which features an intelligent system. It's not just a SIM card or a feature or the infotainment system. I mean, it should provide better trip, safer trip, smarter trip, and more reliable trip. And I think in the future, and I know I'm still talking about the car, but I think we build it on a car because it is, let's say, with 80% of the trips involving a car, it is, let's say, important. But if we make it a smart device, where even in the future, I think you can buy or lease or rent or hail a very, very affordable car as a much lower price than today, and then decide also with the software on demand, what type of features do you really need? Do you need it for the whole year? Do you need it for just the months? Yeah? So when it comes to the shift of ownership to usage, is not only for the whole device, it's also for some functionalities of the device. And this could and this is where I want to also talk a minute about the self-driving vehicle, because I think in this whole equation about the transformation of the industry, connectivity, mobility, the real game changer is when we do not only add connectivity features, but the really self-driving features. We are, of course, invested with our joint venture Motional, and our vision is really that we use the self-driving vehicle at the point where it's the strongest point in need. And besides that it is quite exciting to make a driver a passenger, the biggest opportunity is that it unlocks the full potential of mobility services. because today mobility services, car sharing, car hailing are just very difficult to operate profitably. Let's face it, right? The demand and the offer has not met at the price point which is good for everybody, right? Otherwise, we would see it going through the roof, and it's not. This is maybe where electrification has been 10 years back, 5 years back, right? But it will be unlocked by the self-driving vehicle because it will, let's say, fix the biggest bug of the mobility services, which is the driver. And we have now, I mean, we have, with our joint venture Motional, started the first robotaxi pilot ever in Singapore, and we are operating the longest standing commercial robotaxi pilot in Las Vegas. And we are now, now with Motional, we have completed more than 100,000 trips and get 90% five-star rating from the passengers used. And as of next year, we are going to scale this and go into a commercial partnership, in this case with Lyft, to put the Ioniq 5-based robotaxi in large-scale deployments. And this technology will make the mobility as a service market from something around 10 billion to probably 10 times as much, not only with our vehicle, with all the, let's say, the self-driving vehicle in the use case of a robotaxi, will really be the biggest transformation we've probably seen.
Alan, you mentioned the Netflix of cars. You've been called that. I don't know if you see yourselves as that internally. Netflix has been making billions. They have data about
all
of us.
We're not yet, no.
No, but I was. The billions that they've been making have slowed down, and I wonder if you can talk a little bit about the business model behind the subscription model. We heard yesterday from another company talking about that. Is it a sustainable and profitable business model?
It is.
Not selling cars to people?
Yeah, it is. And let's face it, if you look at it on paper, the profitability is better than selling cars,
right?
Believe it or not. Of course, it takes a while because you need a certain critical mass. But actually, given the success that we're experiencing after our first year, we will end in that critical mass already next year, which would be very soon. So yes, it is possible to make money selling mobility. But it's to the question of the transformation also of the car industry. I can only imagine how tough it is, and I don't want to challenge as a non-car person to join that industry. And I've been there. When I have a really difficult moment and I talk to my colleagues in the car industry trying to transform, I feel so good. It's so much more easy to start something from scratch than changing something that has been existing for 100 years. Because you're absolutely right. It's a device that changed the horse. And it still is. It still is. You sit in a car company, I'm sorry to say, but 90% of the meetings are about the car. And it's not going to be that. And to change that is so much more difficult than to really start from scratch with something. And it does require also technology. I find it fascinating what my colleague is doing with the solar cars. I believe in it. I really think there's a future for it. But it has to be combined indeed with sharing, and I find it fascinating to hear the car manufacturer saying sharing is not working. It's, sorry to use that same word again, it's bullshit. There is demand, we see it. Our demand is there for sharing. If your business model is about selling as many cars as possible, of course you don't want sharing to work because it's gonna diminish your volumes. It is, so it's if you're really into the business of sharing, which in our case it is, I can assure you, it works.
Patrick, net zero and sustainability are things that companies have been using for some time as a sort of a nice to have, something to aspire to, but it's looking more and more like these things are going to become monitored and regulated. Is that something that's going to create a problem for the people on the stage, the people in the room here, when it turns from a nice to have to something that's actually controlled and monitored and regulated?
Yeah, I mean, a couple of points. I mean, we see a lot of trends. I mean, first of all, of course, there is still a lot of pressure on the products and the environmental friendliness of these products. Just think of all these emissions investigations, which are still ongoing. Then we see a clear trend and movement also not to just look at the product itself, but at the company. What is the company doing in terms of sustainability, environmental regulations? And you know, you may know the Shell judgment that we had some time ago, which was really against the company as a whole and not just the products. So there is a lot of pressure on the companies in terms of hard law, but also soft law. And when it comes to all these regulations, and this will be interesting to see, there are a lot of players out there, new players, new entrants, which have great ideas about how to make the products and the company more environmental friendly. The legislator will look at this and will legalize these issues. So they are losing at some point their competitive advantage. So if they say, I have, you know, circular economy or so with my products from the beginning or whatsoever, or even sharing could be something where the legislator could at some point say, why is this product only used 5%? It should be used 20% as a legal requirement. So things that may now be a competitive advantage because you are so innovative may be regulated at some point, and then these players will have to rethink and think again and be innovative again to always be ahead of competition. So I think there will be a competition, or there is clearly a competition in terms of being sustainable and who is more innovative when it comes to sustainable solutions.
Jonah, you're that new entrant that Patrick just mentioned there. Tell us about how these issues of facing sustainable mobility, sustainability and ESG requirements is, you know, drives your business, shapes the meetings that you have and the investment that you seek.
Yeah, see, I have the deep belief that if you're really into it and you give it your whole heart, people will feel it outside. And why I'm saying this, when we founded the company in 2016, when we had the status of the company made at the notary, the very first paragraph that you can change in the status in Germany for a GmbH is the third paragraph. The first two are fixed. You cannot alter them. But the third one you can alter. And what we did was we called that paragraph the environmental paragraph. And we said the highest goal of the company is the protection of the environment and the people. And we made it so clear what we're about to do, and that paragraph has to be followed. There are even then detailed descriptions that a managing director who is acting against it is to be fired. So we really are 100% into it. And there are people joining Zonal Motors who said, well, look, I thought I will never work in an automotive company. Why? Because I have the feeling there's a lot of greenwashing going on. And then I found you. And I found on your website, for example, one example was, you only offer vegan catering. And I was like, why are you only offering vegan catering? And I was like, okay, I think you are 100% into it. And in that regard, also our customers, our people, we call them the community. They're feeling we are 100% into it. And what you say is, of course, there will be legislation following, but it will always be a following. Mm-hmm. And if you think about a car or any product and think, what can I do? You will naturally get new ideas and innovations that drive sustainability. For example, what we also said, like, okay, we have this 5% usage and 95% of the time the car is standing around. Maybe we can increase that to 10%, but still we have 80% left. Well, the rest of these times, the car is useless, but why not use it more? First of all, it can charge itself, one thing we changed. The other thing is, we made sure that the car is from the very beginning on bidirectional. And I know by now also Hyundai is doing it and other car companies are trying to do it. So making the car bidirectional means that you can give power back to the grid and you can buffer renewable energies. And so you can think far more, but the whole drive of it is if you really think about sustainability. And that brings all the rest. So that's why we believe in the very heart, when you mean it, when you give it the whole heart into it, you will still be at the very forefront of it.
And it resonates well, right? I think this is also a good, let's say, output you see while doing the right things, right? That you also see that the consumer reacts to this. For instance, in the Netherlands, we have launched in a couple of markets our car sharing brand Motion, right? And in the Netherlands, we combine the car sharing in a neighborhood of Utrecht with the bidirectional charging, what you said, right? And this is actually a neighborhood which is where I was first thinking, okay, this neighborhood is very strongly focused on active mobility, which is perfect. So, but walking, biking. But sometimes people need to resort to a car, and but it would definitely not make sense now for, let's say, people to invest in, let's say, their own cars, because usage would be low and their right mindset. And having in such a scenario a car sharing scheme where people can easily, let's say, jump into the car, and knowing that the using the vehicle to grid technology, where also the car can feedback the energy when it charges the energy when there is a lot of renewables in the grid. So you can really be sure you're driving not only an electric vehicle, but it's also powered by renewable energy, and so you have really no emissions in the car, and then also it feeds it back when there is the need. So, I mean, of course, ESG is where, I mean, it's so exciting to hear you talking about the chances you have when you start a company, but there is even for, let's say, large existing companies, so much opportunity in transform.
Some really positive thoughts. We need to draw it to a close. Thank you very much for sharing your thoughts with us today.
Ride, the Urban Mobility Podcast, is brought to you by Covetic and Pay by Phone. Learn more about Ride podcast partners at www.covetic.com and www.paybyphone.co.uk. This episode of Ride was recorded and produced by Martin Strong, with marketing support from Natalie Webster. You can subscribe to Ride wherever you get your podcasts, and feel free to share it, like it, and give it a rating. Sign up to the Ride LinkedIn page and check out our website for episode notes and links, and the Ride podcast blog at www.ridemobilitypodcast.com.